Hey, podcast fans, this episode is brought to you by No Halftime, the fantasy sports app that's changing the way we play daily fantasy games. Frank, it's been about 8 weeks since I've discovered this app. It's really changed the way that I play fantasy sports. I'm loving the concept that No Halftime has. It's cool. It's head-to-head player matchup fantasy sports. It's fun. It's easy. I'm hooked. And it's not breaking the bank, Frank, which I like. I mean, I heard you won some nice money last week for the Masters.
Yeah, man. I'm up $30 from I played a, like you said, it's player versus player. And I took Adam Scott for round two over Dustin Johnson in round three. And what I like it's so cool about this is even though DJ ended up with finishing overall much better than Scott, you know, because he had that one better round, and that's what I figured he was going to play early. He was going to play better in the early rounds. You think right. of things like course conditions, what the weather is going to be. There's a lot of factors that come into play, but this is what makes it so fun, so engaging. And like I said, it's not like regular fantasy golf. You can keep playing. I mean, you can pick up, even on Sunday, you can pick up another match. You don't have to have your lineups lock on Thursday. So I've really been enjoying it.
So check out No Halftime. They got a great fantasy concept developed. Again, we're loving it. They've got every sport you can imagine available in the App Store. Coming soon to Google Play. Visit nohalftime.com for more info. And they're even going to throw you $10 as a bonus when you deposit. But just use the code GOLF at sign up. So No Halftime, where the fantasy sports season never takes a break.
The Golf Podcast, presented by Golficity, where we bring you the tips, instruction, and support you need to get the most out of your golf game. And now your hosts, Frank and Mike.
Welcome to the 113th episode of the Golf Podcast. Tonight we're going to talk about some shortcuts, some ways that you can improve your scores just by changing your approach to the game a little bit. You're not having to change your swing at all. You know, we always talk about different mechanics and things like that, but this is going to be a nice break from that. We're going to talk about with your same swing, some ways that you can just improve your scoring. And you'll see what I mean in a moment when we get into that. That's going to be a fun one. In the meantime, I'm Frank. As always, I have Mike here with me. Mike, what's going on?
Not much. How's things with you?
Things are good. I'm kind of excited. We got a lot of really great feedback and emails. I always end every show by telling people this is a two-way conversation. You know, email us at podcast@golficity.com. So I love when people come through with that. And we've got some regular listeners who email us regularly and some new listeners. So it's always great to hear from you guys. So definitely keep that coming. A couple that I wanted to kind of point out, and I thought this was kind of cool. Eric, who is somebody that we had mentioned on the show before, and he's emails us from periodically, but he talked about his club fitting experience. And we said we dive into that a little bit, Mike, about different things that we've done. And one thing that he noticed, and I completely agree with him because I've heard the same thing, there's a lot of club fitters out there who are recommending dropping 3, 4, and even all the way down to 5 irons in favor of hybrids. So he wanted us to, and this is something we never got a chance to do, Mike, he wanted us to kind of break down our own, you know, kind of what's in the bag, so to speak, and what we play, so we can get an idea. And I had kind of going back and forth emailing Eric today, and I was saying it's definitely something I've heard a lot. In fact, when I got fitted for my Ping irons maybe 2 years ago, I had a almost special order my 3 iron because the set didn't even really come with it because they're so used to people playing with the hybrids. And I think there's good and there's bad. I think it's going to be something, like I said, it comes down to a personal decision. It's not even necessarily a skill level thing because we're even seeing some pros on tour for at least for certain tracks where they're dropping the 3 iron and 4 iron in favor of hybrids. Some guys just hit it better. If you want to speak generally, I think one thing where you see with hybrids is that they get the ball up in the air a lot easier. They're a little bit more forgiving with that nice, you know, the flat bottom and the way the weight is distributed. On the other side of that coin, you can make the argument that irons are a little bit, you're able to shape the shot a little bit more. You know, you can do a little bit more with them because they're less forgiving in a way. But here again, there's a fine line because when you have those cast irons, not the blades. I'm not talking about forged blades. Cast irons, they're getting so big, some of them, these oversized irons. it becomes very similar to a hybrid in a lot of ways. But there's good and there's bad to them. So, Mike, let's just run through it. What, I know you are a hybrid guy. You really like right. You hit that hybrid really well. Give us a quick rundown. What's in your bag?
So I have the driver, I have the Nike Easy Driver, and then I have the 2, 3, and 4 Nike hybrids. I have a 5-iron through 9, and then wedge 56, 52, 56, and then putter. So my thing, Frank, with hybrids, it's funny because I push my irons and I can draw my hybrids nicely, which is, you know, just something I have to work on. But, you know, I never really use the 5-iron. It probably never gets swung. The 6-iron maybe once or twice around.
Because you're hitting those, you're long enough off the tee, and with the second shot with the hybrids that you're going into the greens with shorter irons.
Yeah, right. That could be it.
Yeah, that makes sense. See, I'm the complete opposite. I go, you know, I have my, well, I recently switched over to the grenade driver. I have that. I have my 3 wood, 5 wood, but then I jump down 3 iron, 4 or 5, all the way down, you know, pitching wedge. Mm-hmm. Then I've got, you know, my 60 degree, my 52, and my putter. But here's where that's something, you know, you saw that one time we were playing with those older guys and they were telling me that I better sleep with my 3-iron because right. I could rely on it, get it off the, you know, off the tee if I needed to, wherever I needed to. I love that. And again, it really comes down to is, like I said, personal preference largely. And that's something that I like. I do not hit my 3-wood well, which right. I think I got a new Ping 3-wood. It's a G25, which I find very similar in shape to some of their hybrids. And just that the fact that I don't have confidence in that right now and I'm not hitting it well, I know I wouldn't have much confidence in the hybrids. It's just, it's a look thing to me. It's a feel thing. So yes, it is true. Like Eric is saying, a lot of people are kind of, being pushed that way because of the different reasons, the technology advancements, the forgiveness. And I don't want anyone to overlook it. I think if you're going to go through the process of getting fitted for clubs, hit them both and see what works for you. Don't try to have someone push you too much one direction or another. If you don't feel comfortable with it, it's not worth spending the money. It's not worth, you know, wasting your time on it. Instead, you know, hit the long irons, hit the hybrids and see which one works for you.
Yeah. I don't even have a 3-wood. You know, I've never had one. I've never used one. I always thought to myself, am I doing harm to my game here by not having that in the bag or having like a 260 shot in the bag that I can use off the fairway? Because I don't, you know, and it's, who knows, right?
Right. And I use mine rarely, I would say.
Yeah.
The times I see my use it maybe once around on a regular course. If I was playing a very long track, it's going to come out obviously a lot more. But on a regular course, if I hit it once, you know, that's what happens. I'll have that one long par 5 where I'll go driver, then 3-wood. But I find that I just, in a lot of ways, I don't need it. You know, going back to playing smart, I would rather, again, if I have a club I have more confidence in, for instance, my 3-iron, I would rather lose 25 yards and have to hit one more club into the green on my third shot right. and know I can hit my 3-iron exactly where I want to versus taking that gamble just to go one club shorter, you know, on my approach. So
sure.
You got to play with your comfortable width. And since I've been using the Arcos system, I've been trying to track all my clubs more and see which ones I'm using and see how I'm using them. And that's a great way to give myself that feedback, you know?
Yeah, it's all good stuff.
So another email that we got was from Will. He's another regular listener. And he was talking about last week, he said how the bunker suggestions, we talked about how to hit from those fairway bunkers. He said they were spot on. But he said one thing he said that was really funny. He goes, now if there was a range on this planet where I could practice those shots,
right.
that'd be great. Mm-hmm. Which is like we said, you really can't. But he had a great suggestion. He said during those kind of informal slow rounds when you're just kind of waiting on the guys in front of you and it's not something that you're playing for playing against people for score or whatever. He says he tries to use that opportunity whenever he can to throw a ball or two down in the fairway bunker and just practice it. So that's getting creative. That's one way to do it for sure.
Yeah. Or go to the beach.
Yeah, right? That's right.
Go to the beach at night when nobody's there. And you could definitely practice it that way.
Like Kramer hitting that one in the whale, in the whale hole.
Right.
Oh, that's funny. So one thing though, he mentioned in his email, and this is something I want to talk about. We brought this up today on the Golf Podcast Facebook group. So I love that group because it's a great way for people to just kind of weigh in and we can talk about things before we go on the air and get some opinions. But we want to talk a little bit about Spieth's meltdown. And he was kind of like looking at it and how Spieth had taken it in stride. And there's so many things to learn from this. One thing he said, Spieth's quote was, you know, I knew that those two bogeys weren't going to hurt me, but I didn't take that extra deep breath and regain my focus, you know, on my lineup on 12. Instead, I just went up and put a quick swing on it. And then we all saw what happened. You know, he put a second ball in the water and it just shows. And as Will said, he said, it's like you and Mike always say, always come back to that pre-shot routine, no matter what, you know, it works at all levels. And even reference Joe Parent's book, which we talk about all the time, Zen Golf. Mm-hmm. He says that's his biggest suggestion in there. You know, and he's saying we're doing this out there and we're trying to get rid of the pressure. But can you imagine doing it with millions of dollars on the line, millions of people watching worldwide, you know, and it just shows the pre-shot routine is something that works at every level. When you see somebody get away from it, this is what can happen. And here's where you take the number one golfer in the world. Well, no longer at this moment, but number one golfer in the world. And even he can just get a little bit, you know, tied up and shank a, you know, two balls into the water.
Right.
So, and if one thing I think is a big takeaway here, if you can see somebody like Spieth who can still manage that composure, you know, if that happened to you or I, what's the first thing you want to do? You want to just like pack the bags in the club at the end of your round and get the heck out of there, right?
Right.
Now, here's a guy who's got to stick around for the green jacket ceremony, knowing he just let it go, just lost it. Mm-hmm. And he's got to just maintain that composure and you know, do the interviews. He's got to talk about it, something that you and I probably wouldn't want to even talk about again. So it just shows you, if he could take it in stride, you know, so can we. I mean, what's the worst case? You put two in the water, your three golf buddies saw it. You know,
right?
Here's a guy who everybody saw. Every single website's talking about it. Every news, it's played on ESPN all day the next day. So you know, if he could take it in stride, I think it shows us that we can. And what the first things you heard Spieth talking about in the interviews after that, and you and I, Mike, we were watching the Masters together, and what did we hear him say? He was saying, "I'm going to learn from this. I'm going to make sure this doesn't happen again." You know, there's your takeaway right there.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, it was quite refreshing for me to see. I didn't want to see him lose, but to see him do what he did on that hole, it was refreshing for me as an amateur golfer, you know, to see that. Like, just like you said, they're human. You know, it kind of boosts my confidence. And right now where I am in my game, Frank, my mental game is my biggest enemy.
Yeah.
It is destroying my golf game. And it proved that last week when I played, but that's a whole nother story. So you know, I'm actually really looking forward to this because my mental game is shot. I should actually pick up that book and just read it because I have not yet.
Yeah, you should definitely check it out. But it's so true. The mental game, look who it can affect everybody. So a couple more really great points that were brought up in the Golf Podcast Facebook group. Andrew mentioned how he could see that, you know, Jordan had been struggling with his confidence in his swing the entire round. And he said, even with all that, it's impressive that he finished, you know, in second place.
Second place,
you know, T2 over the whole deal. Even with all that, even with the quadruple bogey and everything like that, and just showing how much he was struggling. So that was a really interesting point as well. It's very true. And he had been struggling with his confidence coming into that round. You know, the last couple of rounds, he played poorly. He knew all the weight was on his shoulders as a defending champ. So, you know, again, that's another great takeaway there. And that's a great way to look at the good side of it. And if it is your game, you could say, even if you were to say, put two in the water on a hole, say, look, overall, I played well, given that I didn't have confidence in my stroke. But going back, you know, a couple episodes where we talked about how to gain that confidence, there's so much stuff that can go there. And then Mike, in the Facebook group here brought up another great point. Again, this is why I love this group, because we learn from you guys too. He's talked about going with the shot you know is working, you know, and he was saying, here's Spieth. If he had confidence in anything, he had confidence in his draw, and 12 called for a fade and he tried to play the fade rather than playing his draw. And you know, again, that could have been part of the problem. Even going away from your game plan, I think that's a big thing. Spieth, you know, he knew how far ahead he was. And he said himself, a big mistake he made there was he stopped playing aggressively. Mm-hmm. He stopped, you know, kind of pouring it on, instead just tried to play safe, play for pars. And when he changed his strategy, we always talk about come up with a strategy, a game plan, and then execute it. When you start changing that halfway through, You know, here's where the problems can come in. So that can be, that's a really strong point there. You know, it's got to stick with what's working for you, what you have confidence in, not trying to hit the shots that in our case, you might not know. Not going to say Speed doesn't know how to hit a fade because he sure does. But in that case, that's not what was working for him. So Mike, very good point there as well. So I want to appreciate, you know, everybody who reached out to us this week. Like I said, Mike and Andrew and Eric, everybody who wrote in, William, Will. Great to hear from you guys. Keep those coming, whether it be in the podcast group or whether it be, you know, emailing us directly at podcast@golfisty.com. We love to hear from you.
Yeah. And you know what's scary, Frank?
What's that?
Hearing you talk. Spieth was not playing his best golf, yet he was beating the field by 4 strokes with 9 holes to go. Just kind of scary because it's kind of reminds me of Tiger, you know, in his prime when he was, even when he didn't play his best, he would still maybe dominate.
Yeah.
You know, it's scary, but it was a really fun event to watch though.
Yeah.
Despite the outcome.
And it was fun too to see all these guys as challenged, you know, as much challenge as they had there because it was significant. The course was playing tough and
yeah, for sure.
But there's one difference with Tiger where Spieth changed his game plan and tried to just kind of like cruise in, you know, knowing he was ahead. That's something that in his prime Tiger would never do. Tiger, you could never say that guy ever got off the gas pedal.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, he would just pour it on as much as he could. And, you know, it worked for him to his test. I mean, that works. I mean, in that case, again, if that's your game plan and that's what puts you in the lead, you got to stick with it. You got to keep going.
Sure thing.
All right, Mike. So let's do a quick word from our sponsor. And then I want to jump right into this because we're going to talk about a couple quick tips that you can use that you don't have to go out and change your swing tomorrow. You can still work on all the things we talk about, all the fundamentals, all the mechanics, all those things. But here's a couple ways you can just play the game just a little bit smarter and you're going to start to see better scores right away. So, Mike, let's do a word from our sponsor and we'll get right back to it.
This episode of the Golf Podcast is brought to you by the Golf Ball Locator app, which is available on iOS and Android. Frank, check out this concept. It's the first app in the world to use object recognition technology to find your golf ball. Yes, they did it. You know, it's pretty cool. It doesn't use GPS. It actually will detect white golf balls that you just know are nearby, but you can't seem to locate it for yourself. You know, what's great is that you don't need to stare at the screen too, which I love about this app. You just keep the phone out while you're looking for your ball and the phone will vibrate when it detects it. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, what do you think, Frank?
Yeah. And what's really cool is it's only $3.99 in the App Store. So it essentially pays for itself the first time you find one golf ball. And you're right. I've used it. You kind of just kind of hold it up as you're walking around, you know, we're doing like kind of kicking leaves over, kind of looking around, and it'll vibrate or make a little bit of a noise too, so you know to look at it. And think about it, Mike. I mean, if these phones are smart enough to recognize our face for a picture, you know, that it's you know, I guess it lends itself to something like this. It's really smart. Someone was smart enough to put this together where you can say now it just kind of finds that golf ball. So it's like having another set of eyes out there, and it can hit a range as far as 40 feet. So it's going to save you some money in golf balls, that's for sure.
Yeah, and it's a great way to speed up the game, that's for sure. And, you know, the developer of this app, Tony, he's a big fan of the show, and he's a very smart guy for creating this app. I got to give it to him. So for the cost of one golf ball, check out this app and put it to work. Like Frank said, we've used it, and the technology is truly remarkable. So it's called the Golf Ball Locator app for iPhone and Android. Check them out. And Frank, back to the show.
All right, Mike. Look, we all want to improve our scoring. We all want to do it as fast as possible. You know, and this is a great, when this article first hit Golficity, I was, you know, I read through it like 3 times because I really enjoyed it. This one's by Jim Baffico, who's one of our featured regular contributors to the site. He's a great golfer himself, and he's another one of those guys. He's just a student of the game. He loves learning it. So trust me, everything that he says here is just like what you and I go through. It's from lessons learned kind of the hard way. So, you know, Take these kind of quote unquote shortcuts to heart, because we always talk about there's no shortcuts in this game. You know, you hear me say it a lot, and it's true. When I say that, I mean, you know, improving your game. But what you can do is you can just kind of bring your awareness to these things, and you're going to start to see some better scores. But the one thing that I'm going to preface by saying is you got to have discipline with these things. It's all about, like I said, that course management, things like that. You got to have discipline, and you're going to have to stick to these even when you don't want to. You know, that's the only way they're going to work. And you're going to kick yourself once you know these little shortcuts, so to speak, you're going to kick yourself for not doing them if you find yourself in those situations. So let's talk about it. Let's talk about the first one. The first one he says, and this is a very, very smart little thing. He says, very simply, when you're in trouble, get out. Okay. So what he means by that is you want to make sure that you, an important tool for every golfer to have is just a reliable escape shot. It's kind of like a get out of jail free card. And this is something that we don't practice. Many of us don't practice. And we talked about it, you and I, Mike, before, hitting the high shot, hitting the low shot. But I'm talking about just a flat, just kind of get it out of where it is and get it back into play type of shot. It could be a punch shot, something you're comfortable with. Me personally, I'm very comfortable, like I talked about at the top of the show, with my 3-iron. Mm-hmm. I can kind of punch that all different distances. And I use that when I'm, you know, off the side of the fairway into the rough and I'm starting to be like in the tree line or something like that where I don't have a clear shot. And we've talked about before where it can be very tempting to try to like punch it and weave it through those trees and you see how much trouble you get into there. So what he's saying here is just get yourself back out of trouble, get yourself back in play. And the way to do that is just to have that reliable escape shot. You know, it doesn't matter what you call it. You just want to get back into play there. You could smother hook the ball, which is something where you just kind of like choke down a little bit and take that shorter shot, or where you could do a slice kind of runner. No matter whatever it is, just practice the shot. You know, you may seem kind of silly at the range if you see that one guy out at the range just playing these like the punch shots. But trust me,
right.
Nothing's more frustrating when you do resign yourself to just kind of punching back in the fairway and not being able to actually execute it and ending up back in the leaves or something like that. So just being able to do that, just kind of like roll those wrists over, bash away, you know, just kind of have a shot that you can run maybe 100 yards, you know, and practice controlling those distances anywhere from, let's say, 30 yards to 100 yards, and just be able to do it kind of automatically. And then have the discipline to do it. Because like we talked about on previous episodes, you may say, all right, if I cut off some of this fairway, I see a clearing up there, I can weave it between these trees, or I can just punch out directly out into the fairway, you know, 30 yards and be there and be fine. You got to go with that higher percentage shot, because if you nick one of those trees, that's when you're going to start to see those quadruple bogeys coming out of nowhere. So that's an important one. And the other thing that I'm going to say that's very key here with the escape shot is once you commit to playing it, do it all the way. Think it all the way through. I think a lot of guys, when they say, all right, I'm just going to punch it out, they just go through the motions. And I mentioned this before on other past episodes. And then what happens is they either overhit it and they run it all the way through the fairway, or they underhit it and they don't get it out. So again, make it part of your pre-shot routine, play smart, and then just kind of make it happen. You know, that's an important one. And Mike, I know this is something that I'm going to try to focus on, making sure I have that discipline, because man, your mouth waters. It gets so tempting to try to play that silly shot. Like, oh, I've got enough loft here, I can get way up and over that tree, or I can punch it through, I see daylight, man. Mm-hmm. How many times do those end the wrong way?
Yeah. I put the trying to be a hero aside for now, because it's just not working out for me. And these shots, Frank, I'm actually getting much better at them. You know, when I'm in trouble, just trying to get it back out. I'm not overshooting fairways. Like you just said, that was a big problem of mine. I would never think about the next shot, and the course management comes back into play. Where do I want to have that third shot, so to speak?
Yes.
You know, so, you know, I'm actually getting much better at these.
Yep. That's a key one. And that's where it will come from. It's just from doing it more often. So just keep that in mind and remember that. Another great shortcut that Jim mentions is something we touched on, but it's been a while since we touched on this one. That's just avoiding the short side. All right. And for anybody who's a new listener and doesn't know what we mean by short side, when you look at the green, whichever side the pin is tucked into, that's going to be the short side. Okay. And a lot of people will say that's kind of like a sucker pin or whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. You've got to avoid that. Okay. We're not, you know, playing on the PGA Tour level where we're sticking these pins wherever they are. If you can just start to play towards the fatter side of the green, you're going to see your scores improve dramatically. I see a lot of amateurs, it's just like, no matter what, it's like that dead locked on target focus that wherever the pin is, that's where they're hitting it. And I used to do that a lot. And only now that I'm trying to retrain myself. In fact, Mike, I drive past the golf course every day on my way to work. And, I see this one par three, and I see where the greenskeeper moves that pin around, and I kind of just do a little mental exercise in my head as I drive by of like where I would try to hit it, and just recognizing the short side. But it's simple. Look, if the pin is on the left, hit it to the open right. If the pin is on the right, hit it to the open left. Don't try to get it close. You know, you can't recover from the short side, and that's why. And I'm not saying I don't have faith in people being able to stick it to the pin. I do. And look, if you were a very confident distance, or if the particular situation lends itself to getting aggressive, you can. But here's the reason I say not to. If you happen to miss on the short side, now let's say there's a greenside bunker on the short side and you roll into that. Now you just added yourself 2 to 3 more strokes because you got to get up and out of that bunker. You've got no green to work with because you're on the short side, which means you got to go back past the pin and then putt back towards it. Or chip, same thing with a chip or something like that. If you miss, that's why it's designed that way, as we say, a sucker pin. You know, it's gonna kind of go out of the way. So for a minute, you know, got to kind of quit trying to be Rory out there and just play it smart, play it to the fatter part of the green. And, you know, so in so much as is close, you know, put it close, but maybe give yourself a 10-foot putt, something that you make, maybe 20% of the time. The other times you two putt and get out of there with your par rather than it becoming a disaster. So be aware of it. You know, trust me, the pros do it. They look for where the short side, even though these guys do go after the pin, they try to go after the pin and still remain not on the short side because they know if they miss and it rolls away, they've got some work to be done. That's a really important one. And that's one, like I said, Mike, I'm going to be focusing on as one of my key areas of course management this season.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a big fan of attacking pins. I always go for that pin. It's probably hurting my game. I should definitely try to put this into play.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. Those times when you do miss, now you're like, you're in big trouble. And that's why it's there. And the short side is something that can be really dreaded for amateurs, especially. All right, tip number three that Jim has is don't be short. He talks about taking one more club than you need. He said if you're 150 yards out and it's a perfect 7-iron distance, he says hit the 6-iron, you know, and commit to it. Don't choke up, don't back away, just hit it. And the reason he says this, and again, we talk about the importance of knowing your distances and stuff like that, but we've also said before, as amateurs, very often we're not getting a pure strike as often as we think. So we have to know and understand those distances. If you're 7-iron, what he's trying to explain here, if your 7-iron goes 150 yards when you hit it pure, right? What happens all the other times? So here's a situation where if you were to hit one club up and you don't quite catch it pure and you're still going to make that green. So it can be a lot of ways. It can be a smart play. But I think what this really comes back to and where I, you know, slightly in a way disagree with him is so much as just saying, all right, you know, if you know your distances and you know them well, really know them, not just like this is your max distance. Oh, don't always be playing to your max distance. And if you go back to some of the tips we talked about in previous episodes of how to really learn your distances, then you're going to be okay. Cause I wouldn't personally want to end up over the green, but that's because I very much feel very confident that I've kind of locked in those distances that I know how far that ball is going to carry. So again, it's something that to be, especially for you higher handicappers, if you find that a lot of times you're ending up way short, it might be because of the fact that you're not quite understanding those distances. You're thinking it more of your purest strikes. So understand, you're not always going to have that. And if you don't strike it pure, you're going to end up way short. And that's what he's trying to help you avoid there. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. Absolutely. And this is one like you that I sort of disagreed with because, Frank, I get up for a 175 shot. I'm not going to hit a 185 or 190 club. You know what I mean?
Right.
I wouldn't be able to do it.
Right. And you were always end up long on your irons anyway.
Right.
But again, that's something you know. So it's more so what I think the takeaway here is that he's bringing that awareness to the game. Mm-hmm. Just being aware of it, being aware of your game and knowing it well rather than – and a lot of times too, I think it can be – kind of a macho thing, so to speak, of not wanting to club down, not wanting to think, well, you know, I got to hit a 6-iron this distance. And because of that, you're ended up shortchanging yourself. So don't do that. You know, play the club. It doesn't matter. It's your game. It's nobody else's game. Play the club that is the right distance and the right yardage for you, you know, in those conditions and that type of thing. Mm-hmm. All right. Speaking of conditions, shortcut number 4, our final shortcut from, from Jim. And there's a lot more in this particular article. I'll link to it in the show notes, which you can get to go by going to golfcity.com/episode113. I just want to kind of hit the highlights here, but there's a lot in here, and he actually does a two-part series of ways that he talks about to improve without, you know, just by playing a little smarter. But he talks about, you know, knowing when to go for it and when it's a no-go. You know when it's a go and when it's a no-go. And what he talks about is, if the circumstances of the shot are perfect, then go for it. You know, the pin is accessible, the lie is flat, the ball is sitting up, the wind is friendly, the yardage is agreeable. You know, you've been hitting the ball well all day. He goes, then go for it. He goes, otherwise, don't. Play it to that safe side. Play short of the water. You know, play away from the hazard. And I think what he's getting to is a very strong point here. And what that is where a lot of us say, why do I play so well on the range and not when I'm out on the course? Well, all those things I just talked about are all things that get introduced when you get on the course. Where's the lie? You know, is your lie flat? Because trust me, when you're at the range, you've got that nice, cushy, you know, fake AstroTurf that's perfectly designed to be perfectly flat. You know, the lie is perfectly propped up on it. You know, not the ball's not in it at all. You're aiming at a, you know, flag that's just out there on a flat surface somewhere, you know, and then there's no water hazards, there's nothing like that. But then we get on the course and now all these factors come into play, and then we wonder why, you know, why are we having trouble here? So what he's saying is, play smart, you know, play aggressive when everything, you know, adds up to the equation, means it's the right time to play aggressive. But when it's not, play smart out there. And even though, again, The pros are doing this, they're doing it at a much higher level because they have a much higher ability to hit the shots they want to hit, but they're also understanding the things that can get them in trouble out there. They're understanding what the lie is going to do to the ball. They're understanding what the wind is going to do, and they know when to get aggressive and when not to. So here's where those areas where if your lie is not quite right, or if the ball is a little bit, and I'm guilty of this. I do it a lot where the ball is just a little bit above my stance. I'm not totally comfortable, but I still try to play the shot I would play if it was a flat lie. He's saying here, don't, you know, play it a little bit, you know, away, you know, aim a little bit away from the water or whatever it may be. Look, do these shortcuts go against the grain for a lot of you hard chargers out there? You know, absolutely, you know, right. And it's not easy, you know, to do. You got to kind of like swallow your pride a little bit and say, like, all right, don't try to make an amazing recovery shot. You know, don't try to carry the water. You know, don't finesse it around that corner. No, what Jim is saying here is, don't do that. 9 times out of 10, it's going to cost you more strokes than it's going to be worth. You know, sure, you hit that shot every once in a while and you remember and everything felt great, but how many rounds are destroyed because you didn't quite do it? And here's the thing. It actually takes a lot of courage to play the game smart like this and play it kind of sanely and see it, you know, see if you have it in you, give it a try and see what happens. And this is where, Mike, so many times we go out there and we feel like, you know, we're driving the ball like a mile and you know, we're hitting our irons well and stuff like that. And then we're losing our shirts on the weekend to these guys who are 70 years old,
right?
You know, and they barely drive the ball 150. But if you look at them, they've been playing the game for so long. They play it so smart and they beat up on us, you know? So I'm not saying to strive to only drive the ball 150. No, I'm saying just work this into your game where acceptable, you know, just play it smart. Don't try to be the hero on a shot that you can't necessarily play. You know, we're not Jordan Spieth. We're not playing 2 rounds a day for the last 20 years of our life. You know, we get out there, we practice, we play when we can play. But just by playing smart, just by having that, as I said at the beginning, discipline, you're going to be surprised how much it's going to help your game.
Yeah, and I totally agree with Jim's shortcut here, because playing smart has been one of the main reasons I've lowered my handicap so much. You know, I kind of like going back to shortcut number ones, don't be a hero. You know, that also means, you know, play smart as well. So, you know, the whole idea and the whole concept of playing smart for me, you don't look macho out there anymore. And I'm kind of put that game away. So it's working. It certainly is.
I'd rather look smart than macho. I'd rather be the guy who's out there and people are saying, oh man, he beat me playing playing some really smart golf than to be like, I just couldn't keep up with the guy who was out driving me or whatever it may be.
Right.
You know, or how many times you hear guys who say like, yeah, he can bomb the ball, but the guy, you know, he can't do better than double bogey because it's a mess after that. So yeah, that's where it becomes going to be such an important thing for sure.
How macho would it, is a 72 on the scorecard look?
Exactly. So give it a try and report back to us. Let us know. What were those times where you kind of went against your normal nature and played something smart or just kind of played a little bit more conservative? And what was the result? We want to hear about it. So leave those comments in the Golf Podcast group on Facebook. Email them to us at podcast@golficity.com. You could tweet us at Golficity, or you can leave a comment on the show notes page on golficity.com. So a lot of ways to get in touch with us, but we want to hear about it. We'll talk about it more on future episodes and on the show. But Mike, you have anything else before we wrap it up tonight?
Yes, I just wanted to once again thank our sponsor, the Golf Ball Locator app, which is available on iOS and Android. We just spoke about them, but check them out. I mean, it's really cool. It's a unique way to find your golf ball if you lose it out there just by pulling your phone out and kind of hovering it around, and it vibrates when it locates your ball. Yes, this does exist. This technology is out there. Give them a shot. It's $4. It's a one-time deal. And again, they're big fans of the show. So once again, it's the Golf Ball Locator app. And again, they're available in the iOS store and on Google Play.
Yeah, I know I'll be using it when I'm out there on the course this week because it's supposed to be finally a little bit warm. So I'm going to get out there as soon as I can. All right, so that's everything we have this week. Tune in again next week. We're going to have some more instruction for you. We're going to be talking about equipment. We're going to talk about golf ball compression. We've got tons and tons of great episodes coming up for you soon. So again, check us out on the web at golficity.com, and we'll see you again next week.